We like to think we're important, Mike.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly you and I would like to think we're important. We like to think people are thinking about us, but none of that, nobody cares what you do. And if they do care and if they judge you for your decisions, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares what somebody else thinks about you? It is not about us comparing ourselves to others, because that's where everybody falls over, right? They're going, this person has this, I deserve this, or I want this. The question is, which is where the financial plan comes in, what are your goals? What is important to you? And fundamentally, when people get really locked in, they all want the same four things. Hate to break it down, everybody's pretty much the same. They want to live in a certain house. They want to have a certain lifestyle. They want to achieve financial freedom by a certain age. And if they have kids, they want to look after their kids and give them a head start in life.
Welcome to another midweek episode of Checks and Balances, brought to you by Partners Life. I am Michael Vincent. This is the Princess Diana of podcasting, James Blair, and we are talking about the five signs that you are stuck in the middle class.
Good morning, my lady.
Sorry, good morning, James.
So, we've done the episode of Five Signs You're Rich. We've done the episode, Your Five Signs You're Poor. What's left, Mike?
Five signs, you're Malcolm in the middle.
Yeah. Now, I think this is a really important one to do because most people are in the middle class, as per the middle, right? You think about a bell curve, most people sit in the middle. And your attitude is the difference between whether you are here now, one in five people are going to go into retirement with a mortgage, whether you are one of those people, whether you are racked up with credit card debt, versus whether you are achieving your goals, working towards financial freedom. It's all about what's happening up here, Mike.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a really key point because, you know, there's a thousand excuses for not getting your shit together and getting your house in order, but that's not what we're here to talk about today. We are here to talk about what are the things you can do to realize that you are in the middle class, and then how do you flip those things around, get your shit into gear and get going?
Yeah, that's right. And the big thing, right, with all of these points, some of them are steps you can take. Some of them are going, these are really bad behaviors and you need to improve these if you want to take control of your finances. But it's all about, you know, none of this stuff is the silver bullet that's going to make you rich overnight. It's consistent steps over time that creates options, builds momentum. So Mike, tell me, what is the first sign you are in the middle class?
The first sign is that you don't have a budget, James. And to be honest, the main reason that people don't have a budget, I think, well, two main reasons. First one, they're scared. Or two, they think, I earn too much money, I don't need a budget.
Yeah. Or maybe the third point is, there's a cost of living crisis. Things are really hard. I'm not going to be able to save any money anyway. So why even bother, right? I'll just deal with it, you know, week by week.
Absolutely. And we've talked about it 100 times. A budget is not about restricting you from spending your money, right? It's if we annualize your costs, add up everything and go, okay, James, you spend $20,000 a year on going out and eating dinner. Are you okay with that? You might go, yeah, great. 20 grand works for me. I have fun. I get utility out of it. I enjoy it. And it's not stopping me from achieving my goals. If my goal was to get out of the middle class to the next class, that is not the roadblock that's going to stop me from getting there.
Yeah, if you want to like move up the districts in the Hunger Games, you've got to get that budget under control.
I've never seen the Hunger Games.
Have you not?
No, I haven't. It's just not my vibe.
Yeah, the volunteer.
What are you smoking?
Volunteer's tribute.
No.
Yeah. Would you step up for me? If I got called up.
I don't know the context here.
Okay, so like if I get called up to fight to the death,
yeah.
You can, yeah, put your hand up and be like, oh, I'll replace him. Is our relationship at that level?
Are we recording?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, nice. Yeah, that sounded very sincere. Yeah. So coming back to the budgeting piece and moving away from the Hunger Games for a second, we'll return very soon. So a budget is really important because your income, whether you earn $50,000 a year, $500,000 a year, or somewhere in the middle, it's your biggest asset. And the budget is what allows you to use your income to move you forward. If you are using your income and you don't have a budget and it's just kind of, we just roll each payday, we're not having any forward momentum. Mm. We're not looking at, throwing money into assets to grow over time. And you will just be one of those people, which is so sad.
Yeah.
It's just so, like, probably 80% of the people I talk to are just like floating.
Yeah, and you don't need to wait for a catalyst to actually get a budget in place. I redid my budget a couple of days ago because I have a significant kind of shift in household costs. And it even, it's strange because I'm increasing the costs by maybe a third, yet by just kind of juggling some money around, I actually, there's no change. Like, I don't need any additional income to do it. It's really surprising.
There's a lot of fat in your budget, Mike. We have spoken about this before.
Yeah.
We'll not deal with your problems today. That's a completely different episode. So coming back to the budget piece, if you do not take action, if you do not set a budget, understand where your money is going, like Mike said, a lot of this is just about clarity, knowing, you know, where, how much money is going towards entertainment, how much is going towards your fixed bills. If you don't know what percentage of your income is going towards fixed bills, you're just not going anywhere. And then it's all about going, okay, I'm going to go buy an investment property, but I know it's going to cost me $2,000 a month to top it up. Or I have a goal to buy my first home in 2 years, so I need to save X amount per month. That income is the only thing that's going to accelerate your ability to achieve the goal.
Yeah, it's easy, right? Calculate it, automate it, and stick to it.
Yeah.
What's number two?
Your credit card debt is more than your KiwiSaver balance, which, my God, is terrifying, but happens to far too many people. And I think, Mike, when we think about it, the relationship with credit cards starts at quite an early age, right?
Mm.
You go to university for a lot of us, and the bank's there going, hey, why don't you have a $2,000 overdraft? Why don't you have
$500 credit card?
A $500 credit card. And you max it out from day one, and you're always chasing your tail off the back of it. Or maybe you had parents who didn't role model good behaviors, and you saw if they wanted something, they just went and bought it. They used debt instead of saving to build towards it. And then obviously, a lot of people, when it comes to KiwiSaver, they're just putting in the minimum. They haven't chosen a provider. They haven't chosen a fund. KiwiSaver by itself is nowhere near enough to achieve your retirement goals. So you're building up all this bad debt over here, which is resulting in you, your income is going towards topping up this bad behavior, and your KiwiSaver is completely ignored. And I don't know, it's with my bank because I like to see it on online banking.
Yeah. And if you take one thing from today and you think the budget's too scary, I don't want to do it, the credit card debt's too hard to tackle, I don't want to look at it, why don't you just take 5 minutes to jump on sorted.co.nz, go through the list of KiwiSaver providers, see which one matches, have a look at the fees, have a look at the returns, have a look at their investment ethos, and make an active choice. It is literally that easy. And like, we've run these numbers for our webinars quite a few times, right? The difference can be tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars come retirement.
Yeah. And when it comes to those high interest debts, if you're going to take action and get rid of these debts, if you're in that situation, one is you first have to look in the mirror. Like, we have to go, how did we get into this situation? Now, it's very easy to look out the window than look in the mirror, but nobody's put you in this situation except for yourself. Now, maybe there was a relationship split. Maybe there was an issue with a business. Maybe you had to get some dental procedure or something that resulted in you going into debt. But if you had those good foundations around money, like an emergency fund, like a budget, you might not have had to have gone that debt in the first place.
Yeah, 100%.
So we need to diagnose the problem rather than just fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're going to be in the same position at the end. So if you do have that that credit card debt, the first thing you need to do is go, why did I get in this situation? Then put a plan in place. Mike, a really good action could be, if you've got that credit card debt, looking at like a balance transfer,
refinance. You can balance transfer credit card debt from, you know, in some instances, you're sitting around 22 to 25% interest on the debt you've accumulated. And they're sneaky. You pay the most expensive debt off last, right? Usually a cash withdrawal on a credit card gets paid off last, right? So, and those are at a much higher interest rate. If you have taken cash out on your credit card, ooh-wee, boy, do you need an emergency fund. But really what we're doing is looking out there in the market and saying, okay, I can balance transfer this debt from 22% down to 1% or 0% for a certain amount of time. And what I want you to do is when you do the balance transfer, you cut that card up. Straight away, you cut that card up and you run the numbers and you go, cool, I've got to pay $10,000 off and I've got 4 years to pay it off in. Then I want you to halve that and go, I'm going to pay it off in 2 years, right? And if that's achievable, that's what you stick to. But you cut that card up, you don't keep spending on it.
Yeah. And your budget is the fuel to pay off the debt, right?
Mm.
What is the cost of my lifestyle? How much do I have left over? based off my debt, how quickly will I be able to pay it off? If you do a balance transfer on a $10,000 credit card, you might save like $2,000 a year in interest costs, which will accelerate the plan. Now, before we move on to sign number three, Mike, I just want to talk about credit cards in general. If you are the person who goes, you know, I don't, you know, pay interest on my credit card.
I use my hot points.
Yeah. I'm the person that's gaming the system. Let's just think about this for a second, right? Do we think banks are a charity where they're going, look, I know everybody's gaming the system, but we feel like we make too much money. And I just want to let people go on flights and have vouchers for Briscoes and all of that kind of crap. No, they are making a profit off the credit cards because people are missing payments. And when people go, I don't miss payments, heaps of those people still miss payments. They miss one or two or three a year. Now, a credit card, right? You might get so many points, but the whole idea is it's credit. So you are not using your money. You are using somebody else's money. So if you are in a position where you can save and have a budget, why do you need the credit? It's all bad. There's no good to it. Stay away from it. Like Mike said, chop up the card.
Okay, cool. Sorry. Woo, we're on fire. Okay. All right, sign number three. You have an emergency fund, but you drive a nice car. You are chasing that asset and the status. You aren't putting in the fundamental work.
Your priorities are just completely in the wrong place if you're driving that sweet Subaru Legacy and do not have an emergency fund. It's completely back to front. The other thing I find quite funny about this one, Mike, is what happens when you buy a nice car. You have maintenance on the car, right? You need to go in, you know, you need to replace two wheels and you're like, oh, that costs $3,000. Funny that. Yeah. You're driving a nice car.
Shout out to BMW Wirehour who quoted me $6,000 to replace my brakes. I took it somewhere else and they were like, no, the brakes are fine.
Yeah. But if you do not have that emergency fund and you buy that first car, firstly, like something's going to go wrong. You're not going to have the cash to fix it. So you're screwed anyway. Second, you're just asking for trouble, right?
Mm.
Life goes wrong. Stuff happens. If you are just prioritizing instead of good foundations of money so you can stay away from bad debts, because the reality, if you don't have an emergency fund, you're going to use debt because something's going to go wrong and you have no other option. And you care way too much about what other people think opposed to building good foundations around your money, growing your wealth, and then buying as many nice cars as you want. And the question is at that point, not should I buy the car, but which color I buy the car. But so many people just want instant gratification and want the thing now opposed to doing it the right way.
Yeah, 100%. I had a really interesting discussion with a customer yesterday about an emergency fund. We're on the phone. He's got 700K rolling off. Wants to know what he should do with it. And he's like, I want to keep making additional payments. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Talk me about your finances. He's like, oh, well, I've got, you know, about 20 odd thousand in my emergency fund directly invested in shares. And I was like, whoa, that's not an emergency fund. And he was like, well, why not? And I was like, well, it may not be there tomorrow when you need it. He's like, oh, okay, well, I've got a few other things. I'm like, okay, talk to me about it. He's like, oh, I've got about 6 or 7K in crypto. So like that can be the emergency fund. I'm like, whoa, that's not the emergency fund. And he like rattled off all this. And we got down to, he's got like $2,000 in a term deposit. And I was like, well, how long is the term deposit for? He's like, oh, it's fixed for like 9 more months. He's like, well, that's not an emergency fund either, is it?
Yeah.
And I was like, mate, you just, it's got to be in cash. You're not chasing a return off this money, right? And I was like, this is for when you need to break glass and save the day. And he could not wrap his head around it. And like the conversation went nowhere. And then I was like, you don't want my, you're not going to take my advice. You know, you're chasing this return. You don't need me. If you're getting a net 20% return off your shares, that's fine, mate. Go and do it.
Yeah. No, that happens a lot, right? Where you're right. It's not about the return on the emergency fund.
Mm.
It's about having stability in your life. Because people go, money doesn't buy happiness. But if you don't have some stability when it comes to your finances, definitely the possibility it makes you unhappy pretty quickly.
Oh, and I was like, imagine relying on cryptocurrency as an emergency fund. It's sort of like relying on me to come home on time. It's not going to happen.
So James, before we continue, I have got a special announcement.
Have you started sticking to your budget?
Absolutely not.
You finally made it as an after-hours DJ.
I wish. Mate, the thing is, we have got a brand new podcast partner, Partners Life.
You mean the award-winning insurance provider with over 300,000 Kiwis insured?
Yep, they're also a New Zealand-operated company and they are passionate about increasing financial literacy amongst Kiwis.
Sounds like a great match. Where can I learn more about them?
Check out their website in our show notes below.
Really thought DJ Magic Mike was going to be a global sensation for a second. Okay, the last piece I want to talk about when it comes to emergency funds. Mike, I'm talking to a lot of people at the moment, either who have been made redundant or are worried about redundancy. And obviously that's just, you know, the market we're in at the moment in terms of a recession. Now, whether, and this is what I was saying to a client the other day, because they were deciding, should I buy a house, should I not buy a house? Whether you do buy the house or don't buy the house, or whether you're worried about what happens, something's going to go wrong at some point. So if you do not get made redundant right now, or if you have been made redundant and you're feeling the pain of it, the question is, the next time something happens, which I promise it is, like you look at, you know, tech moving faster and faster, you know, businesses having to change faster and being more nimble, there is always going to be this risk around redundancy, which means you need a good emergency fund, not a sweet ride. You need cash in the bank or in an offset or a revolving credit. When if you're, you know, because with a lot of the time, a redundancy is actually a blessing in disguise, right?
Yeah.
Like you get to reassess and go, what do I want to do next? A lot of people have earned a lot more money off the back of it. But if you are living paycheck to paycheck and have no backup, it's going to be a lot of pain.
Yeah, absolutely right. We're having these discussions more and more frequently now around the mortgages, around should I make the next move, should I buy the house, the whole thing. And if you don't have the emergency fund, all of that becomes a lot harder.
Yeah, cool. Sign four, instead of chasing assets, you chase a salary. And I think this links back to the budget piece as well. So if you are the kind of person who is just wanting more and more money so you can go out for dinner more often, you know, pay your credit card back, pay your car repayments back, do all of these things, and you're not thinking about my salary is an opportunity, if well managed, to consider, you know, consistently invest into assets that grow over time, you're thinking about the game completely wrong.
Yeah, and you know, we have a number of clients who have really high salaries, but their asset base is just so low. And you look at it, you know, we might be getting their first investment property or something, and they're 50 or 55, and they've still got a chunky mortgage on their property, no other real assets to show for it. They might have, you know, a couple of jet skis and two Range Rovers, but there's really no real asset there that would appreciate.
Private schools.
Yeah, and that even that asset doesn't appreciate over time, right? That's the thing. And when you kind of look at it, you're like, what have you been doing?
Yeah.
You know, this time is your biggest asset when you're trying to grow your wealth, right? We know that, you know, small consistent steps over time builds wealth. And over the long term, time will fix most bad investment decisions. But you've got to make sure you're making the right decisions. You're not chasing that instant gratification, that salary now. You're investing for the long term.
And that's a really important point in terms of you get to 50, 55, and you look around and go, what have I done? For those listening to the podcast, for those watching the podcast, do not be that person. You have an opportunity. You are listening to a financial education podcast to take control of your financial future. Nobody gets rich listening to a podcast. I'd love if they did, because then we charge lots of money to listen to the podcast. This is an education tool, but education doesn't go anywhere without any action. Education plus action equals financial freedom over time. And you need to look at your situation, get your partner on the same page, and work out what is our plan, what are the first steps that we need to take. Salary is great, but we need assets. And we don't just want assets like a big fancy house. I was talking to somebody the other day who was thinking about selling a rental property to buy a holiday home. And I'm like, if this is a PG show, I cannot say what I'm going to say because you're never going to talk to me again. But what a stupid decision to replace a wealth creation asset for a lifestyle asset. You need real assets that if you're going to stop working at some point in the future or reduce your hours in the future, you have assets that have grown and will pay you an income.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Sign number five. The brand matters more than the bank balance. This is where you are always chasing brands that give you that feeling of wealthy. You look wealthy. You look affluent. You look like the Ponsonby 500. But underneath it all, there's no substance.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that do this, right? That, I mean, coming back to the credit cards, they will use credit cards to buy these clothes, to buy these nice things, to give the perception of wealth, to live in the Instagram age. But none of it's real. It's all fake. And you've got to decide what are your priorities. At the end of the day, we'd like to think we're important, Mike.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly you and I would like to think we're important. We like to think people are thinking about us and, wow, look at like Mike's sweet new kicks or new ride or whatever it might be. But none of that, nobody cares what you do. And if they do care and if they judge you for your decisions, who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares what somebody else thinks about you? It is not about us comparing ourselves to others, because that's where everybody falls over, right? They're going, this person has this, I deserve this, or I want this. The question is, which is where the financial plan comes in, what are your goals? What is important to you? And fundamentally, when people get really locked in, they all want the same four things. Hate to break it down, everybody's pretty much the same. They want to live in a certain house. They want to have a certain lifestyle. They want to achieve financial freedom by a certain age. And if they have kids, they want to look after their kids and give them a head start in life. They are the priorities for people, not I want to have $300 shirt or whatever it might be. And if you want those things, the question is, you know, coming back to my budget and my plan, how do those decisions impact my ability to, you know, get those bigger goals I'm after?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we look at this, if we're looking at the five signs you're in the middle class and we're going, I want to make a change, it's time for me to get this gear into gear and kickstart it. What should people do if they want help loading the gun and pulling the trigger?
That's a really
hell
good
of an analogy.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a really good question. Sometimes people think just coming and talking to a financial advisor is the answer, but it's got to be up here. Like some, you know, coming back to what are your priorities and that consumerism over that long term building the life that I want. The first thing you've got to do is, if you have a partner or if you're single, either talk together or work it out by yourself. Am I happy with where I'm at? Because if you're happy with where you're at, if you can kind of look at what the future holds and you're like, oh, it's like, it's all going to be fine, then keep doing what you're doing, because reality is you come and talk to somebody, nothing is going to change. But you need to think about what are those goals that we're trying to work towards, both short-term and long-term, because it's all a balance, making sure you have that budget in place. And then what is the investment strategy to grow my wealth over time? And if I'm consistent, what is the output? Now, you might decide you can do that by yourself. You might want a financial advisor to help you do that, which obviously we can help you with. Now, I'd say 20% of the game is knowledge, right? 20% is knowing what to do. 80% is behavior. So the other piece some people have a financial advisor for is, I know what to do. It's like going, oh, I'm going to invest into index funds because I'd want to pay really low fees, but then you rack up credit card debt, you go on holidays, you don't save any more money. A lot of people need support on the behavior side.
Yeah.
So they are the actions that I would take.
Yeah, and if you draw the analogy to sports, right? Tiger Woods knows how to go out and swing a golf club, right? But what he needs is support around the mindset, around making sure he's on track, making sure he's training, doing those things. Because at the end of the day, the guy's naturally talented. But if you don't have some support over the long term, it's very hard to be a pro.
Cool. So this is your wake-up call. Do not stay in the middle class. Do not drift through life. Take control, draw a line in the sand, and move forward so you can have options down the line, opposed to getting to 50, 55, 60 and going, oh, crap, look at all the time I've wasted. None of those things really matter. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to Partners Life for sponsoring. Please give us a subscribe, a review, and a like, and we will catch you next time.
Cheers.